Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
He came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. When he reached the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not come into the time of trial." Then he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, knelt down, and prayed, "God, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." Then an angel from heaven appeared to him and gave him strength. In his anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down on the ground. When he got up from the prayer, he came to the disciples, found them sleeping because of grief, and he said to them, "Why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you may not come to the time of trial."
A lot of us like to make plans. We like to know where we're going, how long we'll be there, what we'll need, and when we get to leave. We use a GPS that dictates our every turn. We make budgets that plan every dollar's use. We make a roadmap for our kids' path to college. Plans make us feel safe, comfortable. I made a plan. I was going to go to seminary, get my MDiv, get ordained in the Unitarian Universalist tradition, and run a nonprofit in a new way. A way that would bring everyone together in mutual love and respect. A way that would eradicate poverty. In short, I was going to change the world. Then I got to seminary. Like a good seminarian, I went to chapel every Tuesday. And like the table, our services often end with communion. I hadn't taken communion in 16 years, not since I left my conservative evangelical church in Casper, Wyoming, to go to college in Connecticut. And when I left Wyoming, I was done with Christianity. As far as I knew, Christians were more concerned with all the things you're not supposed to do, all the things God hates. Love did not figure into the Christianity that I knew. Why then did I end up at a Christian seminary? Well, it was part of the plan. Christianity is the dominant language of this country, so I thought I'd get to know it if I wanted to change it. And the schools that offer me the best financial aid happened to be Christian. So there's that. But then something happened when I started taking communion. I cried. I didn't cry. I sobbed. Classmates sprinted to grab Kleenex for me, and strangers on staff held me as I trembled. I ate the broken bread and drank the wine, and it cracked me open. I had a plan, but God had other plans. We make plans, but how often do our plans roll right off the track? And how often do we panic, then scramble, then fight to get those plans back on track, even though that train is never getting back on? See, God doesn't always call us to plans. God calls us to hope. Hope. This is the word I hear when Linda and Matt call us to say yes to the mess. Because hope isn't tidy or predictable or anything you can drop into a timeline. No, hope is wily and surprising and guided wholly by love. Hope calls us to be open to God's possibilities, even when they may not be what we expected. Which isn't to say it's wrong to have particular hopes. Of course you hope that your child is going to be happy. Of course you hope you'll flourish at your job and maybe even get a raise along the way. And of course we hope that this congregation continues to grow and thrive as a community. This isn't even to say that we shouldn't make plans to help bring these hopes to life. Maybe you make sure that your child goes to a certain school so that she has the best opportunity to learn and grow. Maybe you take classes at night to get a degree that helps you get ahead in your job. And just a few weeks ago, we all set specific goals to commit deeply both to our individual spiritual lives and to this church community. It's important to make plans, to be proactive in moving towards our hope. We make deep commitments so that we are mindful and intentional in the way we move through our lives. But God asks us to make plans that are open to God's possibilities. Hope is a hand open, ready to receive whatever gifts God has for us. So many of our plans, though, are this, not this. The difference? Our desire to control a situation, to marry ourselves to a particular outcome at any expense, closing off our ability to receive what God might have for us. What I really like about today's scripture is that it shows Jesus' human side. It shows how Jesus keeps his hand open to God. He prays to God, "If you are willing, remove this cup of suffering from me." Jesus is in anguish because he knows that God's plan for him is going to cause him to suffer. And for what? What God keeps calling him to do feels fruitless. Though he has healed people and cared for the least of those around him, he is still an outcast in society. His very short ministry seems like a failure, and his friends have repeatedly shown him that they don't trust him. Jesus is in despair. "Remove this cup from me," he prays. In that moment, keeping his hand open to God feels like the hardest thing in the world. And for Jesus, it was. In the next few verses after our passage, Judas betrays him, and the authorities take him away to be crucified. But Jesus could feel in his gut how important it was to keep his hand open. You feel it in your life too. You know in your gut what the right thing to do is. You know what it feels like to have God's will coursing through you, guiding you through a situation. And sometimes, the right thing is the hard thing. But how often would we rather avoid the hard thing? How often would we rather be like this than this? How often do we want to take full control of a situation instead of trusting what God has planned for us? Matt and Linda asked me to preach on the latter section of Luke, partly so that I could explore what the cross and the resurrection mean for me. As many of you know, and as you just heard, I recently reconverted back to Christianity, and these are really difficult concepts for me. As I said, I was raised in a conservative evangelical church. I was taught that the cross was a symbol of my sin, and that Jesus had to die so that I could go to heaven. I was born a sinner, and because Jesus died, I won't go to hell. But that never sat well with me. It's true that I'm a sinner. We all are. We all do things that take us away from God and God's love. But I don't think God sent Jesus to balance the scales of our sins. I think God sent Jesus to teach us what perfect, radical love looks like. The kind of love that guided God's creation of this beloved world. The kind that brings us back to God when we sin. The kind of love that is divine. God sent Jesus to us as a fellow human to show us that we are capable of that love. In fact, we are called to it. Of all the Gospels, Luke is the most adamant about showing us that radical love of Jesus. Only in Luke does Jesus tell us about the Good Samaritan, the foreigner who helped the beaten and robbed man on the road. Luke gives special attention to Jesus' treatment of those who are outcast in society, lepers, women, tax collectors, foreigners, and shows us how Jesus honored and loved all people, no matter what. And no matter what kind of love defies categorization and control, doesn't pick some over others. It doesn't fall neatly into structures we put in place to separate people. A no matter what kind of love is wily and unbounded. It asks us to give up control and to let God move in between us. But we humans like to have control. We didn't like it so much when Jesus asked us to give that up for the sake of love. The political and religious authorities of the day depended on control to maintain power, just like how we think maintaining control keeps us in power. So instead of relinquishing that control in favor of love, we crucify the man who called us to that love. That's what Jesus' crucifixion means to me. At the Mount of Olives, Jesus knows that he is going to face extreme suffering, and he is in utter despair. The authorities are looking for him, his friends are asleep, and things seem completely hopeless. If you are willing, he prays to God, remove this cup from me. But in the very next breath, he says, yet not my will, but yours be done. Even in his despair, Jesus did this. Jesus knew he needed to let go, to continue walking in the love that God called him, that God sent him here to show us, even if it cost him his life. Not my will, he said, but God's will be done. We often speak of Jesus' death as a sacrifice. I don't think of it so much as a sacrifice as a surrender. Maybe that word makes some of you bristle, but let me explain. By surrender, I don't mean capitulation. I don't think Jesus decided it was hopeless and turned himself in to become a punching bag for the authorities. No, I think in the space between those two phrases, between remove this cup from me and not my will, but yours be done, Jesus found the final resolve to authentically live the life God called him to live. He surrendered his desire for things to be easier and embraced the love God called him to be against all the cultural and religious norms of the day. And while his surrendering caused him to suffer, it wasn't the suffering that was transformative. It was the love he stuck with through everything. None of our paths will be as difficult as his, nor are they required to be. We are not called to suffer. We are called to surrender. Jean Blomquist describes surrender like this. Surrender is not so much a giving up as it is an opening up. It is a dynamic living and striving in the face of the unknown. When we surrender in faith, we enter into the power of God, into the realm of all possibility. We open ourselves to new perspectives, thoughts, and dimensions of life and living yet to be explored. We do not give ourselves up in the sense of extinguishing ourselves, but instead the little lick of light we are joins with the holy flaming that is God. We are brought more fully into ourselves and at the same time brought into that fullness which is greater than all that is. To surrender is to go from this to this. Our sin of this, of control, may have led to Jesus' crucifixion, but thank God for resurrection. The thing that always bothered me about my childhood church was that Jesus seemed to be dying every single Sunday, except for Christmas and Easter. But there is no meaning in the crucifixion without resurrection. If the crucifixion is about control overpowering love, the resurrection is about love having the final word. The resurrection is God's love come into full glory. It's about hope. The resurrection is God's plan revealed, proof that though saying yes to the mess might be really hard, it will eventually lead us to the broad expanse of God's love. Resurrection is what brought me back to Christianity. I took communion at chapel, and I remembered how the disciples didn't recognize the resurrected Jesus until he broke the bread for them. And as soon as they recognized him, Luke says, he vanished. And the disciples said, were not our hearts burning within us? At chapel, I ate the bread and drank the wine, and I felt my heart burning within me. I remembered how Jesus died professing love and how death could not stop that love. But in taking communion, I was challenged. We are all challenged to live that love, to live always in hope and with an open hand. But isn't it so hard to live in that hope sometimes? Isn't it so hard to choose this instead of this? Because this requires trust. Hope involves risk. Faith involves risk. What is faith about but trusting in something we can't prove or predict? And what is doing this? What is hoping if not affirming your faith in God? I wasn't here 3 years ago when Central United Methodist Church started worshiping as the table, but I've heard some stories. I heard it was hard and messy for some. The music changed and the bulletin went away, and what were these pastors thinking? Many of us have seen Deanie's video where she talks about how she was really struggling with the changes. She could have done this. No, really, she could have taken Matt and Linda out. Instead, though, she decided to pray and pray and pray. In our short scripture reading, some version of the word pray occurs 5 times. Jesus prays, of course, but he also tells his disciples to pray that they may not come into the time of trial, that they may be delivered from the temptation to succumb to evil in the midst of adversity. I think that's why Deanie prayed. She wanted to open her hand to God to make sure that her next steps would be in line with God's will. She risked putting her own plans on the line for the sake of hope. And thank God she's still worshiping with us today. Deanie started with a certain expectation of what church is. I wonder how many certain expectations we have for our lives, for our spouses, or our children, or our jobs. I know I have plenty. I am going to get straight A's in seminary, and I am going to wrangle my life to do that. I'm going to not spend any time with my girlfriend. I'm not going to work out because I don't have time for that, and I'm certainly not going to spend extra time with God. I mean, I'm at seminary. I'm there to get grades, right? Or at least, I mean, that's how it's been lately. So I want to ask you to do something with me. I want you to hold your hand out like this, fingers loose and open to God. I want you to imagine a hope you have sitting right there in your palm. Imagine what that hope looks like. Imagine the feeling you'll have if it comes to pass. Imagine all of that sitting so lightly in the palm of your hand. Now imagine what happens when you start to grab onto that hope tightly. When you try to take control of it and try to make it happen your way. Maybe you're crushing it, or maybe it's oozing out from in between your fingers like Play-Doh. Either way, it's not looking good for hope. You can put your hands down. But that's what we often do, especially when things start to get hard. Like the people who crucified Jesus, we want to take control of a situation instead of opening ourselves up to the love of God and the hope that love brings. What is this opening meant for me? Well, it's meant driving to this crazy Methodist church every Sunday in Sacramento and getting up in front of a lot of people and preaching. I could have done my internship at a nonprofit where I would have been much more comfortable. I worked at a homeless shelter for years, and I was going to change the world, remember? That was part of the plan. But I felt God pulling me somewhere else. I could have done this. I really wanted to do this. But if I couldn't trust God's will for me, If I couldn't do this, then I had no business being in any ministry anywhere. So here I am, trembling in front of all of you, and trusting that God is taking me where I need to go. So where is God calling you? Where is God in your plans? Are you stuck in despair with a clenched hand asking God to take this cup away from you? Or have you taken that deep breath, opened your hand, and said, "Not my will, but your will, God, be done."
Jesus, lover of my soul, let me to thy bosom fly. While the nearer waters roll, while the tempest still is high,